Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. Thanks again for joining us for our season finale of season 13 on the Global Development Primer podcast. This week, you're probably going to laugh a little bit. I hope you laugh a little bit as we have the one, the only Kyle Hickey joining us. He is a comedian here in Nova Scotia. And after starting a stand-up over a decade ago at an open mic in Halifax, Nova Scotia, he's blossomed into a talented writer, actor, and comedian making appearances at the Boston Comedy Festival, CBC's Halifax Comedy Festival. There's an exclamation point in Halifax, by the way. Sirius XM's Top Comic and JFL 42 in Toronto, as well as acting roles seen on YTV, MTV, and Amazon Prime. And this week, Kyle is kindly joining us here to talk about why some politicians, and in particular, Vladimir Putin, just can't take a joke. So Kyle, welcome to GDP.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. It's wonderful bio. It's almost like I wrote it myself.
You know, plagiarism is loosely enforced these days. I'm finding, you know, it's ChatGP will take us all down eventually.
Yeah, Kyle, I was going to say it was ChatGPT either way, so it's fine.
Well, Kyle, you've got a lot of experience writing comedy, knowing comedy, delivering comedy, and right now with what we're seeing unfold in Russia. We've got, Navalny killed, right? The second attempt was successful by Vladimir Putin to end his life. He was a funny guy, and he was able to really sort of connect with people. He was able to speak tongue in cheek. I think even just the day or two before he was killed in the Russian prison, he was cracking jokes in the prison box to the court, saying, we've had all these great rulers in history. We've had, the czars of the past and all these great Russian leaders. And now we've got Vladimir, poisoner of underpants. Like he was sort of a natural comic. And then I think about Zelensky as well in Ukraine. He was a comedian before he became prime minister or president of Ukraine. So I guess yourself as a comedian, what is it about a guy like Putin who can't take a joke?
I would assume that it stems from narcissism, the whole reason that they are clamoring for power in the first place. You know, like just historically, leaders like just don't enjoy being joked about. And that's really what comedy is about. It's historically George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, they all sort of spoke truth to power. So the power tends to not really enjoy that. But when they do, it's so refreshing. Like Barack Obama was a hilarious, like if you see him doing like the pundits roast and it just comes off so well. Yeah. As a normal person just watching. And so I think Putin comedy comes from sort of laughing at yourself, being able to be the butt of a joke. But when you're in fear of losing things that you have, Kim Jong-un as well, like just you can't joke about yourself because then you come off weak and you don't want to come off weak. And it's a scary thing, you know. And I hated Jimmy Fallon kind of got a lot of heat for when he toughed Trump's hair and made him seem like he was sort of this jokey kind of guy, and when he could have like been a little more scathing or maybe hold his feet over the coals a bit, he chose to just kind of give him a little hair tough, and that helped Trump's numbers politically gigantically, because he just looked like a guy who could laugh at himself, and that goes such a far way. And then it turns out that he can't laugh at himself at all, and if you say he has small hands, he has a mental breakdown.
Exactly. Well, do you remember that it was, like you said, one of the press office roasts, right? And Obama's up there and Trump is in the audience. And Obama's cracking the jokes. Like, you know, the big difference is that, you know, I'm president, you'll never will be. And these things. And the stare on Trump was just laser focused. The whole room is just on its knees, you know, keeled over, and there he is just with that little pout, just sort of looking right at him. Like that was such an example of that.
And it was maybe the catalyst for the spite that drew him to become the most powerful person in America. Like after that, he started even pushing, because a lot of people didn't think he was going to run for president again. And because Obama had that great joke, it was like, I have to make choices about the free world, and you have to figure out if Meatloaf is going to be like the captain of his team or whatever. You know, it was like an apprentice joke. It was really, really great. And he just delivered it so well. And I don't even know if they did it last year. I feel like they canceled one when Trump, like years ago, they canceled one, or Trump didn't go.
Yeah.
But there was, yeah, I think it was what happened. But yeah, it was so fun to watch though, because he didn't laugh at all. Whereas I've done roasts before and people making fun of me, I laugh the hardest. It's cathartic a little bit to hear things said aloud and about yourself, and to just sort of laugh at yourself for a moment.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, you know, and the politicians who have been able to roast themselves and have a laugh at it are numerous. I was just thinking, you know, the Brian Mulroney, he's just passed. He was Canadian Prime Minister, but he was pretty famous at those press conferences. I forget what the name of it is in Canada for it, but where the comedians come out and everyone's making light of themselves, he would always have some good gaffes about himself at the time. And, even the 1980s, Reagan was a joker, even in his own style, right? He had like a whole deck of jokes about the Soviet Union that he just, you couldn't get him through a speech without him popping these things off, you know?
Yeah. And it goes such a long way. I was just writing for This Hour is 22 Minutes. And, we have a cast member, Chris Wilson, and he plays Pierre Poilievre, so well. And so Pierre was doing a rally in New Brunswick, so we had Chris and a camera crew go as Pierre Poilievre, and people were convinced that Chris, they were giving him standing ovations, they thought he was Pierre Poilievre, he was handing out straws saying that global warming wasn't real, and people were lining up to take the plastic straws from him. And there was a moment where we were trying to get Pierre to sort of play ball and have that, you know, face off with Chris, and they could, and his people wouldn't even entertain the idea. And This Hour is 22 Minutes has been sort of a staple in our political satire universe here in Canada. And it was what I thought would have been a wonderful opportunity for Pierre to sort of make light of himself, to joke a little bit. Because Harper used to play ball with 22 Minutes a little bit, but Pierre was, I think it's the whole defund the CBC thing. I'm not quite sure, but I thought it would have been an opportunity for a guy to laugh at himself a little bit, and he was not interested.
The narcissism of these political leaders now, that's creating that fragility, you know, why is this something that people are continuing to support? I guess if we can ask that, like, that seems like a big character flaw for any political leader, not to be able to joke about themselves.
Well, I think that it started maybe what comes to mind is sort of Trump taking the, if you're making fun of me, then you are an enemy of mine. They're just lying to you, sort of the, you know, when he was going after Kimmel and all these other people. So I think that now jokes, and it's so funny because it's typically kind of comes from the people who are like freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. But then you sort of joke about their political leader, and then all of a sudden freedom of speech is not okay. You know, it's tough to say. I would assume it's from narcissism, struggling for power.
Yeah. And you know, it was even when you had Putin on TV, on Russian TV, if a reporter was to ask him about Navalny, he wouldn't even mention his name. He'd say, oh, the person who you are speaking of, or the person who you've referred to. I mean, he was that intimidated by these guys that he wasn't even able to acknowledge them by their own name. It seems staggering. And, you know, as a comic, as someone who's very familiar with comedy, you know, what is it that keeps people from having that laugh, from taking, seeing the light of something, seeing that it isn't as, you know, as deeply serious and committed as maybe we're on any particular issue, that where there can't be some sort of humor brought into it? Is there something that drives people away from comedy?
It's tough to say, you know, like as a comedian, you're always just trying to write what you think the general public will find funny. People who lack a sense of humor, it's tough to say why. I would imagine that, you know, when you're saying a joke to somebody, it's going into them and then it works its way through their life trauma and all these things that they've got bottled up inside of them. And then it comes out. I would imagine that, like, I don't know. It's like, it's tough to say, like, you're probably not having the best time in your life if, mm-hmm. if you're not able to laugh and be jovial and go out. And I think there's something contagious to it too. That's why I tell people to go watch it live, because there's, you know, like I'll watch comedy, I'll nod and think it's funny, but if I'm there live, all of a sudden you're laughing and there's something in the room that's exciting. But with like Putin and stuff, it's all classic propaganda. If I don't say your name, you don't exist. Then your supporters won't even know that you're still alive in jail or whatever the case may be. Because like I can't name one Russian comedian. Like it's I don't even know if comedy does exist in Russia. I would imagine, because what do you even joke about?
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, I looked up briefly the history of comedy in Russia and how it sort of evolved over the years. And if you go back before the Soviet Union, you go back to the age of the czars, a lot of the comedy there was focused on just actually how poor everybody was. That you know, the czars just had this insane amount of wealth, and people are just on the edge of fighting for potatoes in the fields, as was the case. It was the inauguration of Tsar Nicholas II. You know, there were stampedes because people said, "Oh, there's free food over here," right? And
right.
were killed as a result of that.
Wow.
In the early part of the Soviet Union, it seemed like it was Stalin the all-powerful. So there was a joke there that something about how President Stalin, your opponent here is your political opponent. He's sporting the same mustache as you. You know, should we? What should we do about this? And Stalin's orders in the end of it, the punchline is basically, well, shoot him, but shave him first. You know, like that sort of thing. Only Stalin could have the Stalin mustache.
Right.
And then it sort of gets into kind of the Khrushchev years. It gets more into the actual inefficiencies of things where, you know, we say that we're going to make this car, but it never shows up. Or we say we're going to build this bridge and it doesn't get built.
Right.
And then towards the early 90s, it backs right off. So post-Soviet Union, the ability for Russians to sort of poke fun at themselves or to have the big outlets of comedians there to sort of lead that charge really does decline. Now, there's a little bit about, you know, at Putin sort of being a powerful character, but nothing like it was in the Soviet Union. Like there were essentially some pretty wry jokes that would go on about just how, you know, they said, hey, we're going to provide you a grocery store full of meat, and it shows up, and I know what the joke was. Yes, sorry, it was we'll provide you it would translate into, you know, a grocery store full of bird, basically. Well, what kind of bird? It's bird. You know, not chicken, not pigeon. Don't question it. Just go eat.
Right. Right. So
poking fun there. But when you get into the era of Putin, it really does back off. And there's been some people who've been able to sort of embrace the comedy. I'm thinking Navalny, like his documentary about Putin's mansion is just tongue in cheek as it gets. And bands like Pussy Riot, who were very, very forward about calling things out. And these people are quickly repressed. They become almost immediate enemies of the state. And I can't think of any political system that has tried to ban comedy as much as Putin's Russia does.
Right. Yeah. Well, and really the only like kind of Russian comedian I can think of is like the one that I don't even think is Russian, where he would be like, in my country, puck shoots you, like whatever that Yakub Smirnoff guy was.
Yeah.
But I think for comedy to exist, like my favorite comedians, like Sarah Silverman and Dave Chappelle or some of these, there's like an air of danger where like you feel like the next thing they say you might not agree with, you know, and that's fine, but that's sort of part of the ride, where if you know that the game is rigged, like Pussy Riot suffered horribly for being who they are, so then if you're a comedian you're like, well, I don't want to go through that, whereas America historically has allowed comedians to say whatever they'd like, and that's why comedy has thrived so much in America, is because you can basically say and do whatever you want. You know, there's a Larry the Cable Guy out there if you want that, and then there's you know, like Tig Nagaro, so there's like, you know, a wide spectrum.
And I think
Nataro, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking the UK. There's another great example where
exactly, yeah,
deeply woven into politics there that you can never divorce it. I mean, Boris Johnson just looked like a comedic target his whole career.
Yeah, exactly.
And who was it? Her name escapes me, but they had the race with the cabbage, right? Which was going to expire first.
Right.
And I mean, that's just very, very telling. I think she was the shortest PM in UK history.
Right.
But yeah, that you couldn't imagine comedy. It was Liz Truss. That's what it was. You couldn't imagine comedy being divorced from politics in that system. And it almost, it's like it's out there as a thing of confidence that, yes, it's dysfunctional as it can get. There's always going to be a budget crisis or some sort of crisis going on within that system. But everyone not only has the right to vote, they also have the right to laugh. And that is perhaps one of the telltale signs of something rolling towards a more authoritarian state, when the tolerance of that begins to really diminish.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree for sure.
But, you know, it also begs the question then that, if these guys in power, like Putin, are so intimidated by comedians, does this reposition comedy a little bit into a political forum where it is effective at turning people's ideas or encouraging people to get more involved in the system? I'm thinking just the impact that Jon Stewart had during the Bush years, and then you know, he sort of hung up his shekel there when he. When Obama came in, and now he's been back on it, back on the stage. But, you know, is this something that is going to encourage comedians to become political? And do comedians like Stewart and others, do they have that influence?
I would 100% say that they do. Like, and that's why Jon Stewart coming back now has been so big with an election year coming. I think that it's because it is so draining. You know, when you watch the news for so long, it's just sad thing after sad thing, and the world and the political climate, it's just very sad and overwhelming. To be able to get some levity from it and watch Jon Stewart or John Oliver or Trevor Noah or any of these sort of political satirists, I think it informs you, and it also can just be like a breath of fresh air of like, oh gosh, not, you know, like it's even the Russian thing, like a lot of what they were joking about is like, look around, we're all starving, look at this, we can't get cars here, like it's this like, everything is crazy, let's all have a laugh about how nuts this all is for a little bit. And if that's bad for Putin, because if everyone's like, this is crazy, we're in a war for no reason, where is it, that does bad for him, because then they start questioning, and then all of a sudden he's gonna start murdering everybody.
And, you know, the question that I think, another thing that Russia struggles with is actually finding the political spaces to start to create any sort of resistance towards Putin's regime. You know, that it is a very heavy surveillance society. It's one where you can get snitched out quick. It's one where you can be identified as a disturber or a disruptor, and then the next thing you know, you've got some police coming into your house. So like you said earlier, with comedy, experience it in the actual theater, in the club, in the physically present performative, is really powerful. And there seems to also be in Russia right now a real lacking of space to make that work. It's almost like it's, if it's going to exist, it's going to exist on foreign social media to Russia, like, which is what Navalny was really trying to do towards the end of his life, is to get his social media presence out there, not just in Russia, but around the world. But that lack of space seems to be a real problem.
Yeah. And it's a scary idea where there's not a space where everyone can speak openly and make fun of everything, you know, because like it or love it, like whether you like comedy or not, it's, you know, an art form that people find substance to.
Yeah. And so what would you say, like, I know though there's humor can go in a lot of different directions. And one of the things that, you know, if we just roll back to the GOP there and the Trump supporters, you know, the time that I spend down in the States, you know, you can kind of eavesdrop into some of these conversations where you have the Trump enthusiasts just going for it. They're making jokes for sure in some of those conversations and some of those rallies. It's just that they're derogatory as hell. And they're definitely a target group that's getting thumped on. And it's usually a group that's in a position of vulnerability or a target on the receiving end of racist or homophobic or you know, gender exclusive kind of jokes. And I'm wondering, you know, the nature of delivering a joke. I mean, how do comics like Jon Stewart and others, how are they able to deliver these sort of questions or these sort of jokes that actually punch right through the issue without really trying to exclude anybody along the way? I mean, that seems almost like a bit of a gift for a comedic writer.
Well, yeah. And I think they're like, and I play a lot of small town Canada. So there would be people who would have, I don't think I could swear on this, but F. Trudeau stickers in their window, you know, people who would probably pledge allegiance to Trump if he was running in our country. For 90% of my act, I'm not getting political or anything. And I find that they're all sort of the same. They're all sort of laughing at the same ideas, the same, because they're all going through life generally the same experience, but slightly skewed politically or whatever their socio stance on things is. But for the majority of it, they're all laughing at the same thing. There's a reason why Big Bang Theory was doing so well. It's not because just the left was watching, it was because everybody was kind of watching. But then you get into a point where if you are making some political jokes, then you're going to kind of lose the audience in a little bit. So for myself, I kind of like I write for 22 minutes. So I'm going to be political in there. I'm going to be sharpening my pen in that. But when I go on the road, I'll tend to stay away from it just because it's so divisive now. And there is so much hate towards it. But for like Jon Stewart and these people, there's like a fearlessness you have to have that I've tried to find over years of doing it, where you're like, okay, even this might come off bad to a certain group, but I'm going to try and make it so funny that even they're going to have to laugh. You know, like even if you do like Tucker Carlson, you should be able to laugh at how silly of a human he is. You know, like, I can laugh at anybody, like any person that I vote for or whatever, like I can laugh at them. So I think there's like, people are coming around a little more to be able to, everyone's kind of laughing at the same thing, but you gotta be the fearlessness. And that's why I would have loved, Putin would only do interviews with Tucker Carlson or someone like that who has zero sense of humor. So he wouldn't have to worry about someone kind of taking the gas out of, or you know, a little bit of that. He'll take Tucker Carlson, who is doesn't know a joke if it came up and kissed him on the face kind of thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, he was genuinely excited about those shopping carts when he was
yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So you know, it's a good point you make though, Kyle, like if you get right into the political and you start going at the leadership and the known associations, either positive or negative, about a leader, then yeah, I could see the room becoming so divisive. But just like you say, it's the common experience of day-to-day life that seems to be where people can share the humor. Like Big Bang is a like a wonderful example, because not many people are astrophysicists in Southern California, but somehow they made that relatable to just so many demographics and so many people. Like, I believe that it was Belarus that tried to rip off Big Bang completely, and they had their own act with all the characters basically looked the same.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, because it just seemed to work. You know, four nerds and a gorgeous woman across the hall in a building was really the context.
And just the three cameras with a laugh track. There's something very comforting from our youth about that. A simpler time where it was just cheers and no one was trying to make real political stances. It was just sitcoms kind of thing. And I think that's where Big Bang Theory fell. It was like, I know it's like Doritos, you know, there's no real nutritional value here. It's just very comforting and delicious to me right now.
It could be even anti-nutritional value.
Just yeah, exactly. Making it dumber somehow.
Just like some of these sitcoms are almost anti-politics. Like they are trying to avoid them. But that in itself seems to be also what is feared in the authoritarian regimes, is having even that window of opportunity to laugh about just how messed up things are. And everyone's got, you know, you've all got, I'm just thinking the cast of Cheers. You know, you had Fraser Crane and his failing marriage. You had Norm, who was in the bar all day, and
his crippling addiction. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this elusive wife who's in hell the 2 hours she sees him every week. You know, all of these things are sort of playing out that people can kind of, you know, that's a goofy guy who's kind of going through similar stuff that I am.
Or exactly. Not. Yeah.
And I wonder again, why is that so bloody intimidating to the authoritarians, to the Putins out there? Because you're not going to get that kind of entertainment or that kind of scene on Russian television,
alone
in public spaces.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nowhere to even look, because there's like, you know, at least, you know, Saturday Night Live has been making fun of both sides. They'll make fun of Biden and Trump, and 22 will make fun of Trudeau and Poilievre. And it's about when you do find, you know, in The Daily Show will make fun of Biden and Trump. And you hope that even the people who are in charge, they give it to both sides a bit. So then it's not propaganda, it's comedy. And that's the difference. It's not just, hey, this sucks and we're all the best on this side. It's the best ones that do it are laughing at both sides and more just taking the, you know, the piss, for lack of a better term, out of government.
As it should. And I think that's exactly where you're going to find the strength in any democracy, is the ability to have a laugh at itself.
Exactly.
In that way. And I think doing so is one where you'll be able to have conversations about some of the harder issues, right? About current homeless issues, about the cost of everything right now, even climate impacts. I mean, if you aren't able to have that forum where people feel that they can engage in a conversation without being crippledly depressed by it, that's not going to encourage dialogue. So maybe that's where another avenue where the comedians serve a really, really important purpose.
Exactly.
In our landscape.
Yeah. For 22 minutes, we just keep going to Galen Weston, because it's like nobody else is going at the guy who's sort of in charge of all this, you know, like being able to go after individuals that we feel are not, you know, the average person maybe doesn't know that who Galen Weston is. So you're trying to inform them as well as being funny and, you know, all that stuff.
Didn't he give us all gift cards for overinflated bread a few years ago?
Yeah, God bless him. God bless Galen.
Yeah. So, well, that's it. That's it. I think, you know, one of the things that I hope our listeners here and that others will sort of see is that there is, in this emerging landscape where there's a reticence to allow comedy to be part of political critique, if it's in Russia, if it's within the Republican Party, if it's any other country that could fall to this, it might just be that ability to commune, to conjoin, to have a laugh, see how just topsy-turvy things are. And from there, we start getting into those conversations that we kind of need to have happen.
Exactly. I think it's healthy for everyone. Have a laugh at yourself.
Perfect. Well, Kyle, I do appreciate you coming on the podcast and joining us today. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to make the trip to Halifax and come see you on the stage sometime and have a laugh with you.
Yes, please. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, man.